Hello, this is the fourth episode of the Moonifest Destiny podcast. Moonifest Destiny is a novel I wrote back in 1991, subtitle The Rough and Ready Balloon Invasion of the Lunar Peninsula of Texas, available on Kindle Illustrated for only 99 cents around the world. In this episode, I will read to you Chapter 3, The Old Tailor and the Young Seamstress. I was limping back to camp one evening when I saw a fat old-timer sewing away at his dirty trousers, sitting in all his spindly-legged, bandy-booted, knobby-kneed glory, there in his dusty long johns. An upsy-daisy bucket for a stool. "Say, you a tailor?" I asked, and he nodded in a curious way, sort of surprised. "Looky here, Pops, I'll give you these two silver wheels embossed with the excellent profiles of our friend the Noble Savage. If you just sew up my shirt and these buttons I bought from that old lunar peddler, they're in the left pocket." The old-timer looked up at me, merry in his eye. "All righty, son," he said. "Lay her down." So I did, and walked away bare-chested in my own long johns, the camp uniform of us regulars, penny-press engravings to the contrary. I was picking the 22-legged mites from my pits and slapping flies, singing for foolish joy. "Green grows the laurel, all sparkling with dew. I'm so lonely, my darling, since partin' with you." When wild-faced Kelly dropped like a balloon ballast down in my path and thumped me smack in the nose. "What in heck?" I cried, holding a handful of nose blood. "I'll give you heck, Jack." Kelly glared crazily at me, his eyes big as boot buckles. "You trying to ruinize my military career?" he shouted, hopping mad, flailing the air with his saber. He had it buckled over his long johns. "Why don't you ask Sarah next time, you fool?" So that was how I overcame my shyness, took my trousers and such to Sarah, who took a liking to me and slipped that little love note in my pocket. The first time I laid eyes on Sarah, it was just beyond all the neat line rows of tents at Annex Agonies. I was taking a saltwater bath behind Mary Jane's hospitality shack, in a wooden tub set under a scrappy Martian palm, planted back when the moon was a Martian dominion. When I heard such a buzzing howl, I had to stand up and peek around the shack. There was a jumble of doughboys, rangers, tarts, and one or two of the less stuck-up camp wives, all crouched and clutching one another with a mighty morbid glee. The center of attention was this tall cactus queen with her long black hair all wild, who was in a barefoot crouch like a wrestler, hands up like claws. Her mean black eyes blazed bolts down at a big, ugly rattler. The snake's knobby tail was flickering fast, snick, 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 like a little demon snare drum. The arm and fist of the snake lifted up out of its broad, muscular coils, weaving back and forth, tongue snapping in and out in little lightnings. The cactus queen bobbed and weaved back and forth, same as the snake. There was a slight snarl to her lip as if to say, "Snake, you are my soup." Then that snarl rose up in a wild grin that made her mean black eyes twinkle. All of a sudden, she and the snake lunged together. The knot of mammal and reptile slipped free, and the cactus queen stood up straight and tall, holding up her fist. The little mob shouted, slapping foreheads and fannies. The snake head protruded from her fingers, trying to snap. The coils seethed, wrapped tight around her wrist. The mob paid up. A pile of coins and script lay at the victor's feet. "Now I got up a little charity collection to buy that feller some breeches," she called, towing the money. Before I realized she was talking about me, She pointed that snake my way. Don't you think I didn't see you peeking at me buck naked from your bathtub behind them bushes? I blushed, but all the same gave her a wink. Then to my surprise, she winked too. She uncoiled the snake from her arm and bullwhipped it against the dirt to kill it. Then a minute later, as I was finishing my bath, all of a sudden a snake comes flying over the shack out of the sky and splashes down in the water with me. My naked flight across camp caused no end of mirth. So, recalling this, pinching my bloody nostrils, I was trying to make up my mind to jump under Kelly's sword and clobber him, if I could. But I recalled we weren't on our farm on the Chesapeake anymore. He was an officer now, his grade purchased fair and square, and I did not relish the thought of my back being tickled by the affection of Sergeant Mallory's nine-tailed cat. Kelly had already made plain his willingness to flaunt his 15 cents worth of gold braid. "Do you know, doughboy," Kelly pronounced with exaggerated clarity, "just who that was you asked to sew your buttons? Who, that fat old slob? Who is he, Professor Morse? Napoleon II? What do I care who that fat old barn-burning son of a loco-foco is?" "That, mind you," whispered Kelly, stopping to grind his teeth on the crisp will of his frustration. "He threw my shirt at me. That was General Taylor. Oh, what are you going to do next? You should have stayed home with Ma." He clasped his hand over his face. I didn't believe him. "Where's my two bits?" Thank you for listening. And as always, please forgive my imperfect reading. This is protected by the license of the Creative Commons, non-commercial Creative Commons license. And I want to mention that if you do happen to look at the Kindle edition, 99 cents, with illustrations, I've included the old period cartoon that was published in a magazine called Yankee Doodle, humor magazine of the time, that shows General Taylor crouched in his tent sewing, while another officer who kind of looks like a stereotypical Prussian type, of course he's American, but he's looking maybe through a monocle or something as the Taylor crouches there, as the General Taylor crouches there sewing. And the caption is, "Simplicity of Old Zach's Habits." That's why they called him Rough and Ready. Thank you for listening.